This is Newsroom North. The aim of this podcast is to connect journalists in disparate media outlets in Northern BC and compare stories, share tips, and lift the curtain for listeners who want to know more about the people making the news. Newsroom North is hosted on CICK Smithers Community Radio at 93.9 FM and found on smithersradio.com.
Welcome back to Newsroom North. I'm Dan Messick, and with me as always is Amanda Follett-Hosgood.
Hi there.
Amanda?
Oh, you're listening to CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio on unceded Cassia territory of the Gidimden Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation.
Yes, it is. And we also have a special guest with us today, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Howdy. I'm Jake Ray. I am from Smithers originally. I am now a reporter for the Lakes District News in Burns Lake and the Houston Today in Houston.
This kind of some, like, I feel like this is like breaking news that Jake's back in community news in Northern BC. When did you start at Lakes District News, Jake?
Not too long ago. I think it was 3 weeks ago now. I was in Terrace before, or during the pandemic, I should say. And then I stepped away from journalism for a little while and just decided to come back at the urging of some close friends who believed in me.
So awesome. It's just so great to have journalists who know the region and the history. You're a huge asset, Jake.
Well, thank you.
And on that note, I realized Jake was back with local community news because he did a great little piece on the Skeena-Buckley Valley riding. And I feel like today we'll probably have lots to say about the formal election call and what's coming down the pipes over the next month.
Yeah.
Month, exactly.
Exactly a month from now, Canadians head to the polls once again. Jake, maybe because you're the newbie on the show, maybe you can dive into what you've been reporting on in that realm with the election in this last little while.
Right. So I just started off with a pretty basic overview of who the candidates are in the riding so far and, what they're all about. I also referenced a predictive model from a website called 338 Canada. And essentially what their predictive model does is it uses polling information from an entire federal level and various other factors to create a prediction of what's going to happen at the riding level. So their prediction is that it's almost certainly going to be a conservative win in the Skeena-Buckley Valley riding. But I wanted to hear what our incumbent Taylor Bachrach of the NDP had to say. I also wanted to hear what the conservative candidate Ellis Ross had to say. There's also two other candidates, a Green Party candidate and a candidate from the Christian Heritage Party, neither of whom I was able to reach for my story. And the Liberals didn't confirm or even answer me as to whether or not they have a candidate. So I hope that I get updated information about that soon.
Yeah, I reached out to the Liberals yesterday and didn't get a response. Who's the Green Party candidate?
Her name is Catriona Wright.
Okay. Is she local?
I'm not 100% sure. I did find a Alberta Green Party, so a provincial level candidate from a previous election named Catriona Wright, and that said she's from Calgary, but it may not be the same person.
Okay. But likely the race is going to come down to conservatives and the NDP. How certain were they, 338, of a conservative win? I know they usually rank them like safe, or do you recall?
Yeah, they're 99% certain that the conservatives are going to win.
Wow. Okay.
I think it was about a 47% share of the vote. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that in the ballpark. In terms of where the NDP was sitting in that, they were not too far behind. So
yeah.
I don't know where that 99% comes from exactly. It would be nice if there was more of a breakdown of how they came up with those numbers at a riding level. But yeah. I get that, it probably takes time to release that information. And so this election was called pretty quickly. I think everybody, is still scrambling.
Now, just to put this in perspective for folks, the last time we had polling that was showing that the Conservatives were going to pick up a majority here in BC, that didn't happen. And then also to note that most of the segments of the population in any given poll is usually about 1,000 to 1,500 respondents. So it's, you know, a lot of the time it's a snapshot, but it is, you know, a fair indicator. 338 does a decent job of doing a culmination of all the polling, like you said, at the federal level. So it's a decent picture of what may happen. But as they say, you know, it doesn't have, you know, the end of the results don't come in until, you know, 9 p.m. on election night. So we'll have to wait to make any sort of real predictions until then. But I haven't seen a lot of chatter on the social media and whatnot about the Conservatives gaining momentum here over the last decade. We've seen about a 12% increase in Conservative support. And then in the same time frame, about an 8% decrease in NDP support. Obviously, we saw in the provincial election here in the northwest of British Columbia, only one NDP riding being held in North Coast by a solid margin. But both the Skeena and the Bulkley Valley both went to the Conservatives. So if that's any indication, it's looking fairly likely that a Conservative member of Parliament may be elected here in this riding.
Jake, I'm curious, did you speak with both Taylor and Ellis Ross?
With Ellis, I wasn't able to get a hold of him, so those were written statements that I got from him.
Yeah.
But Ellis is actually somebody who I know from when I was reporting in Terrace, and so I'm hopeful that I'll get to talk to him during this campaign, you know, maybe when he stops and burns like next or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because, you know, like Darren was saying, there's some recent history that shows there could be a Conservative swing in this area, but there's also two really strong candidates in Taylor Bachrach and Ellis Ross. You know, both have done a lot for their communities and both are really well liked. So that is a real stalemate in my mind.
What's your sense of what they see as the big issues for our region?
Well, one thing that Taylor Bachrach brought up was the trade war with the United States and how that's going to have a big impact even locally and how that's a big responsibility of the federal government. But I will say that because I'm new to this position, I haven't been in the North for a while, and so I'm only tangentially connected. I think that you two would probably be better to speak to the primary issue.
Well, and I wanted to ask Dan about a story that just came out yesterday or the day before in Des Moines, related to the election, energy exports. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you heard? Did you reach out to the candidates for that story?
Yeah, I didn't reach out to Taylor and Ellis Ross over that one, just because it was already in the pipe, so to speak, before the writ was dropped. So I did reach out to the Conservatives, to Pierre Poilievre's office as well as Ellis Ross's office, about the tanker ban in particular, about wanting to push more pipelines, LNG. But it was more wanting to take a look at, well, you know, 10 years ago, we saw this big united front of First Nations and municipalities that opposed Enbridge's Northern Gateway pipeline, a bitumen pipeline that was going to go to Kitimat. And, you know, all the misgivings, not only environmentally around the project, but also the way that the company conducted itself. So I was curious to see where are sentiments at now. We've heard rumblings from the Conservative corner that they want to repeal C-69, which is the Impact Assessment Act, which some people call a project killer. And then there was also some discussion, talk, and mention of repealing C-48, which is the oil tanker moratorium, which is on the north coast here. So any oil tankers, large oil tankers between the north coast, the border of, with Alaska, all the way down to northern Vancouver Island. And so, you know, that was put in place after Enbridge pulled out and the federal government canceled that project, but, you know, pushed forward Pacific Northwest LNG, which ended up pulling out as well, and obviously approving LNG Canada, and that is actually going to be shipping out LNG very soon here. But I was curious to get a bead on you know, how people felt about the tanker ban, and what started it was Grand Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs had a press conference. He had mentioned that we should build these pipelines, not the Americans, because we'll do a more environmentally sensitive job, but it seemed that he was supporting, you know, expansion of oil and gas, which he and the union have been against, you know, solidly for many years. The next day, he retracted those statements, and a lot of people started wondering what was going on. Marilyn Slett put out a statement as well, and then the Heisla put out a statement saying that they that doesn't align with their values, putting an oil port or an oil pipeline through their territory. So once I started talking to people in Rupert and Kitimat, it was pretty clear that one, it's a long shot, is kind of the consensus at this point. Two, there would be a lot of disruption, like we saw last time, lots of protests, lots of opposition, mostly from community and First Nations. And then also the companies reached out to Enbridge. Enbridge responded saying, you know, we have a lot of capacity right now that we're underutilizing, and there's better ways to do this type of stuff that doesn't impact the environment and community. So, you know, that just kind of, those are just the facts, you know, just basic facts of how people are feeling here about this.
What did you hear from the Conservatives? Did they clarify their position on the tanker ban and an oil pipeline through the north?
As of recently, no, they have not. The language also was specific to C-69. Mind you, there was a meeting that Mark Carney, Prime Minister Mark Carney, had with Premier of Alberta Danielle Smith. And in that meeting, she outlined 9 non-negotiable demands. And one of the demands was to repeal the tanker ban on the north coast.
Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to get clarification from Ellis Ross on this, because
he'll be in town tomorrow.
Is he? I didn't know that.
At the Legion.
Okay.
So
great to know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Just how I wanted to spend my Saturday.
Indeed. We'll see if. But it, you know, it brings up an interesting point, because, you know, the line that he's always talked about, which also the NISCA have been talking about with their LNG proposal, is that it's lifting his community of Kitimat Village out of poverty. From what I understand, that, you know, yeah, lots of people have got jobs. But again, there's this, and this is what happens with any large ticket, you know, resource project like this. There's a lot of jobs in a short period of time, and then there's a few jobs for a long period of time. And, you know, this idea of boom and bust, and how do we get over that? And you know, the issue here is, you know, obviously we all need clean air and clean water and whatnot to live and breathe. But on the same note, we can't just have, you know, one after the other as the means to economic freedom or whatnot. There's got to be a diversity here. And we've seen that with communities that have gone all in with one part of the economy and not the other. And when something like a mill goes away, you know, towns collapse. And, you know, we need to ensure that there's a level playing field, that we can keep these, you know, big ticket items, these big job creators, but also have a lot of diversity going on. And that was kind of the sense that I got from people, was that, especially in Rupert, there's a lot going on in Rupert right now. And the question is, you know, for the city, talking to Mayor Pond, could the city take on more people? Could it house those people? Could the infrastructure take that pressure? And right now it could not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a big story for you. Now that it's off your plate, what are you working on something else? What's next?
Diving into definitely to the election, and hopefully, you know, problem with elections is we hear a lot of rhetoric from people, and it is what it is, you know, the taglines. I come from an era when I was in Toronto with Rob Ford, stop the gravy train, you know, and it worked, you know, and so these taglines, you know, often work, but I'm more interested in getting to the nitty-gritty. How are we going to fix the housing issue? You know, we see a lot of houses being built here in Smithers, but they're not, you know, generally speaking, affordable houses for people on the lower end of the income scale. So how are we going to kind of even that playing field? I'm curious about that. And then also something that just came across my desk, lack of lamps is in the middle of, they're going to have a vote on April 9th about a constitution. And there's a lot of concern from tribal members about that constitution and what entails if the membership votes yes. So I'm kind of looking into that.
There's actually a lot going on provincially right now. Like, my inbox has been full of mining news. Lots going on with Red Chris, Mount Polly, First Nations weighing in on some of these provincial decisions. But honestly, like, I'm at a point where I need to dive into the election. I'm not, yeah. There's only so many reporters in Northern BC, unfortunately.
Indeed.
Yay,
indeed.
Jake.
Yes.
Do you want to hear what I'm working on?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, I've started bugging all the same politicians that you guys have been bugging, and I'm hoping to dive into that next week. This week, I was super excited to get one of those kind of like big stories off my plate that I started after the holidays, and it could be a federal elections issue. My sense is that it won't be because we're so focused on the U.S. right now. But it's about immigration and the cuts to international students and the effect that that's having on our small communities, which is like, it was just a big topic that I bit off. Fascinating, but so multifaceted.
Yeah, very interesting. I know our community colleges here rely heavily on international students, so I'll be interested to take a look at that.
Yeah, I think Smithers is less than some.
Than most,
I got the chance to go and chat with them there, and so far they're not looking at any cuts, but she wasn't ruling it out for next fiscal.
Yeah.
But they're just such an important part of the community, you know? Indeed. They offer post-secondary education not just for international students, but those international students are ensuring programs go ahead for local people, potentially people who can't relocate to access higher education. And then they're also so tuned in to community needs as far as local workforce. You know, like, do we need healthcare workers? Do we need people in tourism? And they're offering those programs in response. So it was quite fascinating that pipeline of, you know, from high level immigration decisions and how that's actually impacting communities on the ground, and how those decisions made thousands of kilometers away in Ottawa don't necessarily reflect what we need in small northern BC towns.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Was there any sense of, is there enough? Because I know there's been many programs that have been offered, but then they retract them because there's not enough people signing up, not enough enrollment. Was that an issue why, you know, we see more international students trying to fill that gap because there's not enough local people to take on those programs?
Well, in some cases, those programs were only going ahead because international students were filling seats. So one of the issues is that the federal government has dictated for college programs which graduates can apply for post-graduation work permits. So, for example, here in Smithers, we had a business administration program that international students were graduating from. They were getting work permits to stay in the community. They were helping out local businesses. Federally, we're not offering that anymore. So it's not seen as a priority. Healthcare is a priority. STEM is a priority. Maybe not necessarily priorities here in Smithers. So the business administration program is being suspended as of May. So it's just some of there's sort of that disconnect because the international students, if they can't stay and work after, they're less interested. Like, they see it as their avenue to immigrate to Canada and become citizens eventually. So
yeah,
that's where some of the colleges I spoke to, chambers of commerce, just felt like Ottawa is not really listening. Mm-hmm. They're looking at what's needed in Ottawa or Toronto and some of the urban centers.
Yeah, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, I'm curious to hear where you're at with things. Obviously, covering Houston and the Lake District in Burns Lake, Houston got a big hit to their economy last year with the announcement that Canfor was pulling back. What are you looking into these days in terms of, you know, the election and other things you got on the back burner?
Well, the biggest issue that I've come across so far has been emergency room closures at the Burns Lake Hospital. This seems to be an ongoing issue that's particularly bad this year. There have been over 20 closures since the start of January, and community members are very upset about this, obviously, because they want to have access to their emergency room. And I mean, that's a broader regional issue as well. It seems like something that a lot of small communities in the north and throughout BC are struggling with. And so what I'm doing is trying to see how long is this going to keep up? And maybe what are some of the other options that Northern Health could explore to alleviate this problem, aside from what they've already done. They have, in the case of Burns Lake, hired new doctors who are meant to arrive on April 1st or start working on April 1st, I should say. I'm really hoping to interview one or both of those doctors and hear about their perspective coming into the community. And also, I'm hopeful that these doctors coming in will be enough to alleviate those closures. I am not sure because I'm just landing. I'm not sure if the Smithers Hospital has had issues with ER closures, but I'm hearing from people all over the province.
Yeah.
Since I started writing about this.
Yeah, I've been curious about that because I'm part of a Facebook group that announces those Burns Lake closures. So I see them and it seems like a lot, like 20, that's incredible. But what I'm not sure of is that unique to Burns Lake? So do you have a sense of how that compares to other small towns?
No, and I probably should do something regional like that. That's actually a really good idea, is to go out in a broader reach with a request to Northern Health and say, you know, is this common to have this many closures?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just sort of comparing it against what is the ideal, which is no closures. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's enough information out there that shows that this is a problem that got particularly bad during the COVID pandemic, and health authorities have been trying to implement strategies to counteract it. So for example, with Northern Health, they're offering bonuses, of course, to doctors who commit to moving to the region and staying in the region. And they're looking at what they call alternative or hybrid health delivery models. I'm not 100% sure what they mean by that, and I intend to ask them, but I think what they're getting at is maybe more virtual doctor's appointments, so Zoom-based or phone-based appointments. But I know, like, Fort St. James has struggled. There's a bunch of places where healthcare centers and hospitals are struggling with staff. So, and it's not just doctors, it's nurses as well.
Yeah.
Nurses require like a certification, I guess, in order to run the ER. So yeah, it's a complicated issue. Obviously, we'd want to have enough doctors everywhere. And then in terms of Houston, Dan, that's a great question about the closure of Canfor. That is having a big impact on the community. And I don't have, like, I haven't cracked that nut yet. I don't have a great big story yet, but I'm paying attention to it and I hope to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess one thing, Rupert has seen acute closures of their ER. Mind you, their ER is also undergoing an upgrade, and it looks pretty pretty good in there at the moment. But I mean, I had to access that back in the fall for a hand related emergency, and in the middle of the night, it worked just fine. There was lots of people there. The service was great. But the reality is that when it's closed, that's a big deal for local folks. And for Houston, I think we looked into this last year, and the word was that they had about a couple of years of tax revenue that they kind of had saved, that the town of Houston had saved, to kind of deal with these sorts of situations, like, you know, temporary short-term closures. But this is a long-term closure of that mill, once the largest output sawmill in the world. And it's just, you know, things have changed so dramatically in this last little while. I'm curious to see what's going to happen to Houston if something doesn't fill the void. So I'm looking forward to checking in with you again there, Jake.
Yeah, the District of Houston is actually working on their financial plan for this year. So I'm going to have a report on that coming up pretty soon, and that will give us a glimpse into the next 5 years at least, yeah, of financial planning for Houston.
All right. Well, we'll definitely check back in on that one. We have a few minutes left. Any other words of wisdom, Amanda, going forward? This is, you know, how many elections have you covered in this riding here, provincially and federally?
Oh, gosh. How many have I been here for? How many have I actively covered? I don't know.
Yeah, good. That's where I'm at. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And it seems like we were just there. It's fun though. One consistency always is Rod Taylor. And I get confused because I can't remember when I look back of which elections were which, because they all had Rod Taylor in them. And I don't know which ones were provincial or federal, so it's kind of hard. But on the same note, there's some comfort that we're always going to be able to reach out and chat with Rod Taylor.
But yeah, if he gets back to you, I guess.
Oh, he does. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah? And the last time around, the last federal election, I was deep into the Skeena.com, a news website up in this region. And we hosted a online discussion, all candidates debate, about just about salmon, because salmon obviously are, you know, big deal here in the region. And it was the first time I kind of, you know, when election time is getting me down, I recall this. It was the first time ever that I saw everyone. Well, the conservative candidate didn't join us, but that was fine. Everybody else, the PPC, the NDP, what else was it? The Green Party, CHP, they were all there, and they all agreed on what we needed to do to ensure that salmon are protected, or that salmon are people are able to fish and harvest salmon. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I saw them agreeing on any subject at all. And that's so cool. It was a little bit different than what we were expecting.
Yeah, salmon, the great unifier.
Indeed.
I always thought of Rod Taylor as kind of a one-issue candidate.
Yeah. Well, that was the one.
And it wasn't salmon.
No. And you know what? It was definitely that time. It was definitely encouraging that Rod had a lot to say about that. And that's so cool. And so it turned out that he's not a one issue guy.
Yeah. It's always nice when people of diverse political backgrounds can come together on something.
Indeed.
Yeah. Hopefully everyone can agree that we need salmon.
Yeah. Jake, any final words from yourself?
Well, I have a election story to share briefly. I have a very fond memory of covering, I think it was the 2020 provincial election in Terrace, and getting to meet John Horgan, which, you know, I'm not starstruck by any means. I was just interviewing him. But because that was pretty shortly before he died, I consider that to be a special moment. And it's funny how elections are sort of a more intimate thing in the North, because there are fewer people, and so everything's a little more visible. And I'm looking forward to a good election this year.
Yeah. Indeed.
They are exciting Indeed. And exhausting and all the things. I think we're just going to be diving in yeah. and, you know, a month from now, sort of yeah. ready for a bit of a break.
30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to welcome Jake back to the North. I think it's so great that you're here and we, you know, obviously need more community news reporters, especially those who are connected to the region. So thanks, Jake. And it's been so great to have you with us on the show. Hopefully we can get you right here in the studio with us one of these days.
Thanks. I will definitely be in the train car before you know it.
Awesome.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. Thanks, Amanda. That's it for our show. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you in 2 weeks.